Welcome back to Timeout Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. If you're in high school, you're probably heading to the DMV sometime soon to apply for your driver's license. Once you get that out of the way, you're probably dreaming about cruising on the California coast or mountains in your first car. If you love the outdoors, did you know that switching from a gasoline-powered car to an electric car can reduce your carbon footprint by half? In a gas-powered vehicle, only 15% of the energy goes directly towards powering the car. On the other hand, 80% of the energy in an electric vehicle battery is transferred directly to powering the car. Gas-powered vehicles contribute to billions of dollars in health and climate costs each year. This episode of Time Out Radio is dedicated to electric cars. You may think that they're a recent technology, so you may be surprised to know that back in 1832, the first crude prototype for an electric carriage was created by Scottish inventor Robert Anderson. The first practical electric car was designed in 1884 by the English inventor Thomas Parker. And the first electric car in the U.S. was made in 1890 by inventor William Morrison, who was a chemist in Iowa. It could move at a top speed of 14 miles per hour and carry 6 people. Thomas Edison worked to build a better electric car battery in 1899. This was the heyday of the electric car. New York City had a fleet of more than 60 electric taxis, and electric cars made up about a third of all vehicles on the road back then. Henry Ford worked with Edison to look at options for a low-cost electric car in 1914, but ironically, it was Henry Ford's mass-produced Model T that he introduced in 1908 that contributed to the downfall of the electric car. The Model T made gas-powered cars affordable to the public. The U.S. had a better system of roads that connected cities in the 1920s that enticed Americans to get out and explore. Then, with the discovery of oil in Texas, gas became cheap and within reach of people in rural areas. Gas stations started opening around the country. On the other hand, few Americans in rural areas had electricity back then. Electric vehicles pretty much disappeared by 1935. Fortunately, the use of electric cars is rapidly rising once again. Now there are over 10 million electric cars in use around the world, and their numbers are increasing each year. There are three different types of electric vehicles: battery electric vehicles, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and hybrid electric vehicles. An electric car doesn't have a fuel tank or combustion engine. It has an electric motor and a battery that can only run on electricity. A hybrid car has a gas engine and a small electric motor and battery. It recycles kinetic energy and transforms it into electricity, which is then used when driving the car in electric mode. If you have ever been startled by how quiet electric cars are, you're not alone. Compared to gas-powered cars, electric cars are soundless. But because of this, they could pose a danger to cyclists and pedestrians who may not hear them coming. These days, EVs have an acoustic vehicle alert system that makes sounds at certain speeds as a safety feature. Norway has the highest number of electric cars per capita. More than half of all vehicles bought there in 2020 were completely battery powered. Norway plans to completely phase out all gas-powered cars by 2025, and because of that, it's our place of the week. Our guest on today's episode of Time Out Radio is Alan Jen, who is an expert in alternative fuel vehicle adoption and moving towards sustainable energy systems. Alan and I talk about how we as a society can move towards a future that has only plug-in electric vehicles. Up next is Over the Moon by Eddie Benjamin.
So sweet from every angle, I peeled it back and tried the mango. I've been living wrong for too long, but my spirit needs you, got that. How could I pretend you're not there? I
gotta hug the wall, you're too strong. I thought you were cat, but then you set it on fire. Ay, yeah, ay, yeah, ay, yeah, yeah. You got the max and yeah, you set me on fire. Now you got me obsessed with that.
Something you do, it just feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away. Does this feel like
something to you? Cause it feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away.
Got me gripping, hard to wind down. Body dripping, starts to shine down. You know how to get what you want.
I thought you were cat, but then you set it on fire. Ay, yeah, ay, yeah, ay, yeah, yeah. You got the match and yeah, you set me on fire.
Now you got me obsessed with that.
Something you do, it just feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away.
Does this feel like something to you?
Cause it feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away. I can't walk away.
Something you don't see.
Now you got me obsessed with that.
Something you do, it just feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away.
Does this feel like
something to you? Cause it feels like summer to me. And my body's over the moon, I can't walk away.
Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Our guest on today's episode is Alan Jen, who is a researcher at the Plug-in Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Group of the Institute of Transportation Studies at the University of California, Davis. So, Alan, welcome to Time Out Radio. First off, you study alternative fuel vehicle adoption and moving toward sustainable energy systems and have a PhD in engineering and public policy. So what got you interested in this area of work?
Yeah, so actually when I was an undergrad, I was probably more on track to do medical doctor type stuff. And so I was working in molecular cell biology, working in diabetes and cancer labs, and I honestly just kind of hated it. And so I think in my junior year, I ended up interning at another wet lab, but for biofuels. And so that was kind of my first foray into alternative energy. And yeah, I was very interested in that. So I ended up also doing an energy and resources major at the university. And yeah, completely switched over to pursue clean energy. And that ended up with me working in clean transportation, although I do some work on power systems as well.
Yeah, and the number of plug-in electric vehicles in California is the largest in the United States and accounts for almost half of all plug-in cars sold in the country in the last decade. And in fact, zero emission vehicle sales in California are growing and have reached more than a million. So clearly EVs are, you know, popular in our state. So how does the cost of buying and running an EV compare to a car that runs on gas?
Yeah, so there's a common terminology for this that people, researchers like to talk about called the total cost of ownership, which I'm not necessarily a big fan of. But if we think about, okay, how much does it cost to buy the car? Actually, electric vehicles can be a little bit more expensive than gas vehicles, although with a lot of the government incentives, the differences are actually becoming quite a bit smaller. But where you are totally winning from an EV perspective is in the use phase. You know, with gasoline at $4 or $5 a gallon right? Compared to the price of electricity, EVs are going to be much, much cheaper to own and operate than a gas car. To give you some perspective, in California, I think the average gasoline price these days is around $5 a gallon, while the average electricity price is maybe around 25 to 30 cents per kilowatt hour. You have to actually compare the two, you have to make some assumptions about like how efficient the vehicle is. But generally, what I would say is that at $3 a gallon, you're probably talking on the order of about 50 cents to 55 cents per kilowatt hour. So electric vehicle operation would be maybe half as cheap as a gas car at $3 a gallon. But since it's $5 a gallon, it's really not even that close. You're well under, you know, half, maybe a quarter the cost of fuel. So more expensive on the buying side, but cheaper on the use side. And then if you actually do the calculation over the lifetime of the entire vehicle, EVs are actually now cheaper than gas cars.
And one issue that electric car owners talk about is range anxiety, which is a worry that, you know, their vehicle will run out of charge mid-use. And asking for our listeners who are maybe planning a cross-country car trip this summer, would an EV work for a long road trip?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a common source of anxiety, this range issue. On the other hand, I feel like not enough people talk about the flip side of the coin, which is that you basically get to top up your vehicle every time you're at home, right? So it's not as though people actually, well, maybe some people, but most people don't actually enjoy going to the gas station, you know, once a week or however often that they go. And so the nice thing about electric vehicles is basically you get to refuel to places that you actually want to go, right? Like if the charger is located at a grocery store, at home, at work, these are places that you will naturally go anyways. And so there is a big convenience aspect to that. But your question is about another issue, which is for long trips, right? Are we worried about the capability of these vehicles to do that? It's actually a nuanced question. There's a lot of stuff that kind of goes into trying to make sure that the experience of a driver isn't sort of too different. So these days, there are really, really fast chargers. And so the old versions used to be like 50 kilowatts. But nowadays, there's a lot of chargers that are 150, 200, even 350 kilowatts. And that means that I could take a 300-mile vehicle, roll into charge, and, you know, fill up most of the way in maybe 10 minutes. And so that improves a lot of the anxiety in terms of these sort of long-distance trips, because you are not quite as fast as a gas station, but you're getting to that order of magnitude. The kind of last thing that I would say that is a big concern for EV owners today is the reliability of these stations. And so it's one thing to be able to, you know, recharge my car in 10 minutes, but if I roll up to the station and it's not working and then I have to go to another station and another station might be full, right? These are issues that I think a lot of different stakeholders are coming together to try and solve. And I think we'll see a lot of progress on that in the coming months and years.
Yeah, the manufacturing of EV batteries depends on materials like lithium, cobalt, and nickel obtained from the mining, the ground and seabed. And much of this cobalt is from the mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo and comes with human rights violations and environmental degradation. And lithium is called white gold, and this mostly comes from Australia, Chile, and Argentina. And its global demand will rise about 40 times by 2040, mostly because of the shift to electric vehicles. So are EVs really better for the environment when you take into account their life cycle, from mining for raw materials to the automotive manufacturing process, their time running on the road, and finally, when they need to be scrapped? And can EV batteries be recycled?
Yeah, super important questions. Earlier, we talked about kind of the life cycle from an emission standpoint, but there are other sort of environmental concerns and, as you pointed out, human rights concerns. So with cobalt, that's needed in particular types of lithium batteries. NMC type batteries require cobalt as part of the chemistry. And actually, because of a lot of the issues that you've talked about, a lot of companies are starting to switch the chemistries. So lithium phosphate batteries, for example, don't require cobalt. And those chemistries are increasingly becoming popular. A lot of the new Teslas, for example, are using LFPs, chemistries that don't require cobalt. And so, you know, part of it is self-policing and understanding that there are other sort of environmental and humanitarian concerns with these materials, but it's also going to require regulatory policy, right? And so having the federal government or other sorts of governments sort of step in to kind of push the industry in the right direction to make sure that we are using kind of the most environmentally conscious and being conscious of humanitarian issues, I think that's an important role that the government will play in regulating these issues. But I think generally, I would say that there's a promising trend in the right direction. And then as far as the sustainability aspect, can EV batteries be recycled? Yeah, so this is an area that is very ripe for research, and there's a lot of work happening to think about not only the recycling of batteries, but also the reuse and repurposing of batteries. There's been a fair amount of research where they take batteries from retired electric vehicles and they use them for grid purposes, right? To have grid-based storage and basically putting a lot of these batteries together to act as sort of larger grid storage devices. That's something that not only researchers are working on, but actually there are a couple companies that are already starting to spring up to take advantage of what's going to be like a really big resource in the future, right? Because we're thinking about, you were mentioning all these really big numbers about EVs on the road, and that's going to translate to lots of retired batteries at the end of the lifetime. And so certainly EV batteries are going to be recycled, they're going to be reused. And there are still some ways to go there, but that will inevitably happen.
And ride-hailing services such as Uber and Lyft continue to be a popular way to travel despite a decline in their use during the lockdowns of the COVID-19 pandemic. And you've done some research on EVs in ride-hailing companies. So tell us a little bit about that work.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the work that I've done, one of the bigger projects, we were essentially looking at the emissions benefit of switching Uber and Lyft vehicles to EVs. If you actually look at the statistics, the average Californian drives about 30 miles a day. And if you look at the data for a ride-hailing driver, like an Uber or Lyft driver, you're talking about folks who might be driving as much as 180 miles a day, right? And so now you're talking about an order of magnitude larger amount of travel. So the research project that I'd worked on in the past was looking at the environmental benefit of switching specifically Uber and Lyft drivers to EVs. And the concept is basically like the governments can support this transition, right? They can provide money to switch people over from gas cars to electric cars. If they specifically focused on Uber and Lyft drivers, given the amount of driving that they do, it turns out that the environmental benefit can be like three times higher for switching those drivers over compared to sort of your average Californian. And one of the big things that's kind of coincided with this research was a California policy called the Clean Mile Standard, which is actually seeking to do exactly that. It's basically a requirement for Uber and Lyft and ride hailing companies to electrify all of the vehicles that are providing services on their platform. And so by 2030, every Uber and Lyft vehicle in California has to be electric.
And more than 10 million electric cars were sold worldwide just in the last 1 year. China, Germany, and Norway have some of the highest EV adoption rates globally. Why is EV use so much higher in these other countries compared to the United States?
Yeah, I would almost entirely attribute this to policy. So the countries that you mentioned, so China, for example, they actually emulated California zero emission vehicle regulation, which requires automakers to sell a certain percentage of electric vehicles, but they did it to a much more aggressive extent. And as a result, their electrification numbers are much higher. In Norway, they have policies way back before even electric vehicles were on the road that exempted EVs from a lot of the taxes and fees that new car buyers have to pay when they get a new car. And because of that, it actually makes electric vehicles more cost competitive, or actually cheaper than gas and diesel vehicles in Norway. And directly as a result, we can see that they have far and away the highest adoption rates of any other country. And then Germany and really kind of the rest of the EU, they had recently implemented these very aggressive emissions policies that can only really be satisfied if the countries basically sold lots of electric vehicles. And so we see a very clear pattern of EV adoption that corresponds to government policies that push for that technology transition to happen.
Yeah, and there's a new rule in California that all new cars sold in 2035 and beyond are zero emission vehicles. And this is in a state where EVs are already pretty popular, and a shift to electric transportation all over the US will reduce the air quality and economic impacts of our country's dependence on oil. So what environmental policy changes are needed to help with greater adoption of EVs in the US?
Yeah, so fortunately, I would say that the current Biden administration has been very proactive in this area in pushing policies forward. So I just mentioned this EU emissions-based policy that basically makes it so that new cars have to be so clean that you can't meet it unless you sell EVs. Well, actually, less than a month ago, the US EPA released a version of their emissions regulation that basically does the same thing. That rule has to still go through a bit of administrative process. It's open to comments from the public, and then the regulatory agency has to review it and then release this final rule. But really what we saw in that rule was kind of very much in the spirit of what the EU rule is doing, in basically saying, hey, the cars have to be so clean that there's no way that you could meet it without having a lot of EVs. And so in the analysis of the rule that the regulatory agency did, they basically said that by 2032, two-thirds of all cars in the US are going to be electric. And so I think your question about there needing to be policy changes to promote greater adoption is hitting the nail on the head. But I do think that we're seeing a lot of that kind of happen these days anyways. So there's this regulatory piece that I just mentioned. Last year, there were a lot of like subsidies. So if you think of the regulatory policy as like a stick, there's also been a lot of carrots that have happened with the Inflation Reduction Act, with the bipartisan infrastructure law, that are providing lots of funding and money to support the transition. So, you know, there's always more that we can do, but to be honest, I think we're in a fairly good place with environmental policies that are promoting EVs.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Alan, and joining me on Time Out Radio today.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
All right. That's Alan Jen, who's a researcher at the Plug-in Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Group at the Institute of Transportation Studies at UC Davis. And that was Home by Kids Waste. In today's travel segment, we visit the country of Norway in Northern Europe, home to 5.5 million people. Norway's mainland is on the Scandinavian Peninsula, which it shares with Sweden and Finland. The country also owns the Svalbard island chain and three islands in the Antarctic. Its capital, Oslo, is a thriving hub for art and culture. The Nobel Peace Prize ceremony is held yearly in Oslo. The ancestry of most Norwegians is related to people from Denmark, Sweden, and Finland. In the 9th to 11th centuries, Viking warriors sailed out from Scandinavia to raid Europe and expand their territories. Norway is also home to the semi-nomadic Sami people. Norway's geography is fascinating. Its coastline is famous for its fjords. These are sea inlets between steep cliffs that were carved over the centuries by glaciers. The country also has many mountains, some so steep that they have never been climbed. In this natural beauty, you will find reindeer and wolverines, 2,000 plant species, and lots of berries. The sea cliffs have puffins, cormorants, and gulls. Its coastline is one of the most beautiful and rugged in the world, and spans three seas, the North Sea, Norwegian Sea, and Barents Sea. If you head north to the Arctic Circle, you can see the Lofoten Islands, an archipelago where there are beaches, mountains, and the Northern Lights. Further north is Svalbard, one of the northernmost inhabited places on the planet. Its nickname is the Realm of the Polar Bears, because up there, there are more polar bears than humans. Norway is known as the land of the midnight sun. If you travel to northern Norway during the summer, you'll see that the sunset merges into the sunrise. The sun only sets for 3 to 5 hours each night in many places, and in June, near the summer solstice, the sun doesn't set at all. And in the winter, the area experiences the polar night, where the sun doesn't rise at all. Norwegians enjoy one of the highest standards of living in the world. They work shorter hours, parents get paid time off from their jobs for child rearing, and have an excellent government-funded educational and social support system. Norwegians have a high life expectancy of 81 years, and the country is safe and peaceful. So it may come as no surprise that despite its cold weather and long winters, Norway is often listed as one of the happiest countries in the world, according to the World Happiness Report. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, the country of Norway. Alright, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to Kater 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.